This episode deals with topics surrounding suicide, so it might not be appropriate for all audiences.
Today, we are bringing you the second part of our series addressing farmer behavioral health. If you haven't heard our previous episode from last week, please go back and listen. In the first installment, Caitlin spoke with her friends from the Washington Young Farmers Coalition about what it was like to lose Justin and some of the specific emotional challenges that young farmers face. Today, we are diving into resources and solutions about the importance of journalism, policy, and community in taking action on this issue. This is the Young Farmers Podcast. I'm Lindsay Lesher-Shoot.
And I'm Caitlin Arnold.
So Caitlin, you reached out to Debbie Weingarten, a journalist who wrote a Guardian piece on farmer suicides in December of 2017. When did you actually reach out to her?
I believe I reached out to Debbie right after her article came out. And I said, hey, Debbie, I just read your article and it really struck home for me. I lost a farmer friend to suicide. You know, I basically was really honest and just said I would just want to talk to you. And she got back to me right away and I was shocked. I've never reached out to a journalist before. And so I was like, oh, she wrote me back. You know, it was kind of exciting. And she was just very open and available. And I believe we talked on the phone pretty quickly after that.
I recently spoke with Debbie. I've known her for a long time, since she was an organizer with the Young Farmers Coalition. When she started researching the issue of farmer suicide, she was a farmer and also experiencing a lot of stress.
As a farmer, I just could not figure out how we were going to save money for like emergencies or, you know, the truck breaking down or sending our kids to college. And just felt extremely anxious about that. And on top of the farm stress, I was in an abusive marriage. I was a new mom. I was super sleep deprived. I felt really isolated, and I kind of put my finger on like, wow, I'm pretty depressed and anxious right now. And I wonder if other farmers are too.
So she reached out to Dr. Roseman, a psychologist who specializes in working with farmers. Eventually, he connected her to other farmers experiencing depression. They began talking. How long did it take to put this story together all together?
So, I mean, from the time I started researching while I was farming, it was 5 years.
But once the research was done, it was hard for Debbie to find someone to publish the article.
I pitched and pitched and pitched this story to so many different outlets, and it was rejected so many times. I think because, you know, it's a depressing topic, you know, or sort of this general feeling like, you know, who's really farming anymore? And like, is this really... this is really relevant. Do we really need to spend, you know, money and space to cover this story?
Finally, The Guardian and the Economic Hardship Reporting Project bought it, and the story was published in December 2017.
And, you know, the story blew up.
The article went viral.
It did.
Do you remember first reading it?
I do remember reading it. I think I actually read it the day it was published, and it just hit home so hard because of losing Justin, you know, not that long before.
Caitlin, remind me when Justin died.
In May of 2017.
So this was about six months after that.
Yeah. Do you remember reading it?
I remember people sharing it on social media, and I was so excited to know that Debbie had written it because I just immediately trusted that it was good journalism. So many of the stories out there are sensational or sort of miss the point on some level, and the complexity of the issues. And I was just really thankful that more people were learning about this and sharing it and thinking about it, people that are not involved in our issues and in agriculture at all. But Debbie was able to make them care.
When I read it, I did also feel this, I don't know if excitement is the right word, but it was like it was like an opening to talk about the issue in a really different way.
Yeah, I was also so grateful and excited that so many people were reading about this issue. It turns out that Washington State Representative Wilcox, after he read it, he got to work on writing a bill to address the problem. And Tierney and Brian, our chapter leaders and friends from Washington Young Farmers Coalition, they heard about Representative Wilcox's bill and they decided to organize around it.
Yeah, my friends Tierney and Brian, you know, heard about his bill and they wanted to get involved any way that they could.
If we had seen this bill come up without losing Justin, we would have supported it. But, you know, there's other bills that come up about agriculture that we support, but not the way that we took on this bill. I think for those of us who knew him, this was sort of an outlet in a way to, like, put some of that energy and that, like, some of those feelings and, like, do something about it.
So even though the hearing for the bill was just a week after they found out about it, WAFC chapter members did their best to help get it passed. What was that, your first time testifying for a bill?
I think it was, yeah.
Lindsay, can you explain briefly about testifying for bills? Like, what happens and why?
Yeah, absolutely. When there's a hearing for a law that's under consideration, representatives that are working to pass the bill will organize a hearing to talk about its merits, like why it should be passed. It's might not be lobbyists per se, but it's individuals that are professionals in the field. They go to testify about why their groups want a certain bill to pass.
So what, yeah, just tell me what it was like.
So we didn't have a lot of notice when we heard this bill was coming up. And then until the morning of the hearing, I didn't think that I was going to be able to testify in person. But basically, I introduced myself and I kind of talked about my own experience as a farmer and my work with the Washington Young Farmers Coalition and the National Young Farmers Coalition, and then some of the stressors that farmers have, and then talked about how we had recently lost one of our founding members. And so this issue was really close to home. And we were putting a lot of our energy behind this bill.
And do you feel like, since you were new and a different voice, do you feel like they really listened to you?
I do think that's true. When you see the other people who lobby and testimony and give testimony constantly, they do just like sit up there and they're like, "Madam Chair and the members of the committee." That's their job. You can tell that it is their job. Although I will also say that even the people who are in the Capitol a lot and were giving testimony for that bill, like the Washington State Grange Association and the Dairy Council, almost every one of those people could tell a story about a farmer in their organization that they had lost in the last couple of years to suicide. So it was still very personal to all of them.
The bill establishes a working group of mental health experts and farmers who will identify strategies to address mental health for farmers specifically, and also establishes a pilot crisis hotline.
So, in part thanks to Debbie's article and Washington Young Farmers Coalition, the Washington bill was passed in mid-March 2018.
You know, it was a unanimous vote, and we didn't expect that. We expected there would be somebody who would not want to vote for this. And I think we were all just surprised, you know, and just so it was like, wow, this is an example of this working. Like we put our support out there and it passed. It was a huge victory for farmers, but only in Washington State.
To understand this issue more broadly, I spoke with Matt Perdue, a former farmer and current government relations director for the National Farmers Union.
When you look at the body of research from 1992 to today, you see that farmers and ranchers and farm workers have a much higher rate of suicide than the general population.
NFU doesn't run a crisis hotline, but he has been receiving a lot of calls from farmers reaching out for help.
We're obviously not set up to handle those calls, and so are always, you know, eager to steer those folks in the right direction, either for a state-based network or for an organization like FarmAid that really provides the expertise and the support that, folks need in those times.
And one of the people that Matt refers farmers to is this guy.
My name is Joe Schroeder, and I am the farmer advocate at FarmAid.
Joe is often on the other end of the phone when a farmer calls for help. And the number of phone calls he gets every month has been going up.
If it was 65, 75 when I started about a year and a half ago, this past month we answered 151 hotline calls. We have to pick up the phone. We've got to do what we can for folks. But we also have to get upstream and try to figure out how to keep these folks from, falling off the waterfall, essentially.
When you look at other industries, like everybody's talked about the downturn in the coal economy and what that's meant for coal country. But when a coal plant or a coal mine closes, that's 40, 50, 100 people in a single community who've lost their jobs and who are all going through the same thing at the same time. When a farm fails, that's often one individual who's lost their job and who has also lost their lifestyle, their livelihood. You know, farms, while we're seeing a lot of farms in really tough economic challenges, they tend to fail one at a time. They tend to, go through these crises one at a time. There's already this barrier in the farming community among people. You know, people are always hesitant to go out and seek that help and ask for that support. It's just, farmers tend to be very independent and very strong people and, at times very proud people.
There are a lot of complicated factors that go into a farmer's decision not to communicate about this stuff.
Joe and Matt both explain that there are a lot of reasons why it can be hard to talk about this stuff. And it's not because farmers are too stubborn or stoic to talk about feelings.
You know, the shame and the guilt is enormous for a lot of folks who are losing multi-generation farms. So sometimes it's just talking to them about all the issues that contributed to this and how most of them were out of their control, if not all of them in many cases.
Many of them are tied to money. Who likes talking about money? Your landlord could be your neighbor, and it wouldn't be good that they know that you are struggling financially. If you live on a multi-generational farm and you are the one who has to sell off the land to make ends meet, for farmers in remote rural areas or without health care, treatment can also be difficult to access or afford.
And we try to make sure they understand that, we talk to farmers all day, every day in this situation.
When farmers call FarmAid, Joe does his best to put those personal issues into perspective. Many of these problems are not their fault, and they are not alone.
Honestly, I mean, when you look at the larger economic forces going on, that are not a failure of an individual person in many cases, but really a failure of our system.
When people ask you, like, why now? Like, why are we seeing an increase in farmer suicides? What is your answer to that?
So I think the economic forces at play here are, can't be understated. I think when you look historically, we often see at least a spike in concern over farmer mental health when the farm economy is in really rough shape as it is now. We've had a 50% drop in net farm income over the last 5 years. Over half of our nation's farms are actually going to lose money in 2018, are projected to lose money in 2018. So the economic challenges there, can't be understated.
And Joe sees the same trend, that the economics of farming are directly linked to farmers in crisis.
I do think that that the rise in the number of calls is an indicator in the crisis. I wasn't comfortable saying that when I started and even for a while after, because I didn't want to extrapolate just the numbers that we were getting and apply that to the argument we were making that we are in a farm crisis. So we did a lot of work over the last year and a half to survey all the other organizations who offer these services, all the other hotlines, and to test a theory, you know, the theory being that the increase in the number of calls was representative of an accelerating crisis. So what we heard back from folks all over the country, but especially in the Midwest, that it was an indicator.
But it's also far beyond, you know, the big picture economics of it, you know, and know very well the just the extreme amount of labor and the social isolation and, you know, the just the stresses of weather and disease and markets. But I think the real reason why I ended up working so much on this issue here for National Farmers Union is because it was a growing concern for our membership and continues to be. And so as we continued to hear those calls from our folks, we knew we had to do something. We had to do something meaningful. So, you know, focusing on the Farm and Ranch Stress Assistance Network and the Farm Bill is a piece in that.
The National Farmers Union helped to get the Farm and Ranch Assistance Network into the Farm Bill, and the National Young Farmers Coalition was really happy to support it too.
And so this is similar to the policy Brian and Tierney worked on in Washington.
Yeah, but this legislation isn't exactly new. This piece of the Farm Bill reauthorizes the Farm and Ranch Stress Assistance Network, which was actually written into the 2008 Farm Bill. But the Washington Bill and the Stress Act are similar. They both establish hotlines and support services.
So what does the Farm and Ranch Stress Assistance Network do as part of the new Farm Bill?
Well, it provides funding for state and regional-based programs to provide services like hotlines, community education, training support groups, outreach services, you know, a whole menu of things. Places that have these types of services experience fewer suicides than those without them. They are proven preventative measures.
And what else still needs to be done?
Matt reminded me that although this is one of our big wins together, it's not going to go anywhere if it doesn't have money. There are many bills like this that are passed in the Farm Bill, the measure is authorized, but they never receive any money.
So, right, we're at this moment right here where we can celebrate this win of kind of resurrecting this program. But it's also in many ways kind of a call to action.
We want farmers involved in policy that supports them. But these stories are also a call to action on a more personal level.
Totally. We don't always have to wait for big policy changes to make something happen. You know, being able to connect with Brian and Tierney for this episode and talk about the power and importance of having a farmer community just like made a real impression on me.
So you work with our chapters all across the country as the chapter coordinator. Outside of policy, what can we do?
Yeah, that's a really good question. What I was going to say earlier about the article, I was going to say that when I read it, it really sparked for me like wanting to do this work with NYFC and with our chapters specifically. And I had not thought about it before in that way. Like I knew that I wanted to support Washington because they were my friends and we all lost our friend, but I hadn't specifically thought like, oh, this is something I could do in my role with NYFC. And like NYFC could be like a way bigger voice on this issue, and we should be. What I want to say to our chapters is that, and through my role here, I want to specifically support chapters around farmer behavioral health. I'm not sure what that looks like quite yet, but I know it's something that NYFC wants to work on. I want us to work on the policy side really strongly, obviously. But I also want us to think about how we can be supporting our chapters on a community level.
This is a hard episode, Caitlin, right? And I know it's hard for you personally in doing a lot of these interviews and, you know, talking to Justin's mom and your friends and like going through all of this. I mean, Justin's death, I think for many of us, brings up this whole realm of farming that's like really scary, right? And real, and it brings us back to like the risk and the very real stress that our farmers are facing. And
obviously that's not all of it, right?
Yeah, I think it's so important that this is feels more out in the open. And I, at the same time, I want to make sure that as we're having these conversations alongside, we are also celebrating like what it means to be a young farmer right now and, you know, all the good that comes along with that. And I hear that so often, like, despite working 14-hour days, I love my job. I feel like if you farm, you do it because you love it and you don't want to do anything else. And I think this episode, yeah, these were so hard to record, and talking about all this stuff is difficult to wade back into, but I'm so glad that we did it because I think it will open the conversation in new ways.
Yeah, Debbie said something similar in our conversation.
I think the agricultural community is so strong. And if we come together, I think, a lot of good can happen.
The story is a story of so many things, right? It's like the story of like a campaign that succeeded and young farmers organizing together. It's a story of like risk and loss and the challenges of being alone on a farm and being an entrepreneur. But it's also like one of the things that I appreciate about this story is that it's a reminder to me of just how connected the farm community is, like across so many other types of differences of scale or production type or age or political affiliations or whatever. It's like the understanding of what it is to be a farmer and that reality. I mean, that binds us all in this way that is in my mind, like very special and very rare.
I think that I do think all the time, because I am the boss or whatever, how best to take care of the people that work with me, whether that means like, you know, giving more time off during the crazy middle of the season and, you know, sacrificing a bed to the weeds. Yeah, I am just always trying to think about how to make this a fun, pleasant way of life. Because when it's good, it's so good. I feel like there's this new openness and understanding that we need to talk about this stuff. And I have felt that shift quite a bit in the past year. I've seen a lot of really vulnerable, you know, posts that I'm not sure I would have seen, you know, a couple of years ago, from farmers, from men, you know. So I'm really encouraged.
We'll have a link to Debbie's article and lots of other important info in the show notes. If you yourself are experiencing a crisis, please call the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 1-800-273-TALK or 1-800-273-8255.
Thanks to everyone who helped us with these episodes and was willing to share. Tierney Creech, Brian Estes, and all the members of the Washington Young Farmers Coalition. Thanks to Debbie Weingarten and Audra Mulkern for your incredible reporting on this issue. Matt Perdue of the National Farmers Union, thank you for your work and for speaking to us. And Joe Schroeder of Farm Aid, how do you do it? Thank you, Farm Aid. Special thanks to Robin McLean, Justin's mom. And thanks to you, Caitlin, for bringing this story and doing incredible reporting. You can take action to make sure that the Farm and Stress Assistance Network receives full funding by texting Farm Crisis to 40649, and we'll connect you with your members of Congress. You can also reach out to our team directly. Just email Caitlin Arnold. She's Caitlin, C-A-I-T-L-I-N, at youngfarmers.org. Let's keep talking about this. If you have other resources to share or feedback on this episode, join the conversation on our Instagram at Young Farmers Podcast. You can also email Caitlin directly at Caitlin, C-A-I-T-L-I-N, at youngfarmers.org. If this meant something to you, please take a second to review us in iTunes or share these episodes with a friend. This episode was recorded at Radio Kingston. It was produced and edited by Hannah Beal. Talk to you next week.